Okay, I would like to introduce our moderator, Greg Sanders. Greg is the president of the Verona Group. His areas of expertise include corporate governance, corporate strategy, repositioning, alternative market channels, mergers, acquisitions, and raising funds. Craig is a four-time CEO. He's led both public and private companies. Craig is the co-founder of the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International New England Chapter, also known as AUSVI. It's the trade association that supports robotic-based companies.
Drones.
Hmm?
Drones.
Drones?
Yes.
The thing I don't know. Right. Craig's executive career is focused on a wide variety of companies in the Internet of Things, environment, technology, net-centric communications and security. His previous board directorships include People's Telephone Company, Sprint Communications Subsidiary, United Telesentinel, Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International, Utilicom Networks, Matrix Telecom, and the Boys and Girls Club of Kansas City. Craig earned his MBA from Pepperdine University.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate everybody showing up here today. The crowd's so large that I was thinking Larry may have promised drinks, but if anybody was promising me, he'd probably push it over to my side of the plate. So. This is a, as sanitized version of a real case as I can give. And so I'm going to, some of the players are still in the business, some of the companies are still in the business, so I tried to hide them as much as possible. And if you ask for any major details, the mic's gonna have to be off before I feel comfortable talking about it. And I've set this up where we go into the conflict immediately, but I'd like to put that aside and let's cover some other areas first. There's a number of people in here that said that they had public company background, and Ellen has got real strong background. I've had some, and I know some of the rest of you have. But we're sitting in an environment that is probably the hottest high-tech environment, entrepreneurial market around. So I think if somebody were to reach out to us and say, hey, we have a board opening for you, it's probably going to be, just because of the number of startups, it's probably going to be in that area rather than joining, again, unless you've already had a strong public company background, rather than joining another board, a public board. So then that sort of, in my mind, that's a different hat that you put on. I'd like you to do that for this discussion because, one, these companies don't have the resources to have, be on staff to handle some of the issues that we've had presented before. And I went back and studied Ellen's and Elaine's cases, and the one that Larry had so much fun about was, what is that, Arrogant CEO?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of laughter in that. You guys ought to go back and listen to that one. So there's some things out of each one of these. So just tell me right off the bat, what are your thoughts about what the founder has done thus far? It's a four-year-old company, two-year-old board. Paul?
First thought is the founder over the short period of time has got this company over the edge. And that has worked for a while, but now they're moving into new territory with a new investor that's provided a significant amount of debt. And they're also linked in and with several of these utility companies who live and work in a more traditional governance and higher profile marketplace. So he's put them in a very difficult spot.
Okay.
A lot of nice progress, things going along at a kind of intoxicatingly successful, achievement-oriented high, but they're on the edge. He's taking them. This company's living on the edge right now.
Okay. Any other thoughts?
The thing that concerns me the most is that the image that comes to my mind is that he has built a house on moving sand. great to gain a lot of new clients, but if you have some 89% abandoning rate, how do you survive? That for me is a big concern. That means you are just running, and you don't pay attention to the details, and you basically lose all, as much as you need. That's the concern for me, that to refocus on.
Another thing that's sparked my attention was that it looks to me like they have 1 million equity and 25 million of debt in
okay.
the startup.
Close, yep.
I would describe it as not overly conservative.
So it sounds like he's probably got a sales background and he's very good at pitching the story to potential partners and investors, but he has no concept of what the operational process needs to be behind that to actually deliver on the promise, and that's coming to a head.
And he was very articulate. So I don't know if it was a sales background, but he was able to express himself well.
I mean, it is clear that laying fiber is very expensive, but if you can't keep your customers, I don't know how you'll build a business. So, you know, that's a very tricky and tough situation to be in, at least from where they've gotten till now.
Okay.
Just an observation, this is it. I would be curious to know what was said to recruit the CEO in the first place, because if he was aware of all of this, why, with his credentials, would he go into this mess? So,
was he aware of it?
What's the question? Because it's not clear if he was aware or not. So I have to wonder what he was told and how aware he was of what's happening, because now he's going to go face the music. He's only been there for, 10 days, whatever it is. Now he's the guy in hot seat. If he's learning this for the first time, he's a pretty angry guy. Plus, he's got a reputation to uphold and so forth, and he understands the value of the company's reputation. So I have to wonder what was said to the guy in the first place to get him, if he was lying to
you. Okay.
I'm also concerned about what the CEO has inherited, but my hunch is that the founder has been sort of sold everything and blinded by the technology. When you look at the customer service and the responsiveness, the foundation upon which the company is built is disastrous. And to your point about it being on shifting sands, it may be a superb technology, but he's not invested or had the money to invest in any of the infrastructure necessary to make it viable.
Okay. Anything else?
That's not enough, Craig.
No. No, it's not. We're getting started. Go ahead.
I think the company is a classic startup problem in some ways, where it grew much faster than they could afford. And the net result is what we have in front of us, right? So my hypothesis is that the CEO was not aware of a lot of what happened.
The new CEO or the old one? The new founder also.
The new CEO.
Okay.
The incoming CEO.
Okay.
My hypothesis is that the new incoming CEO was not aware. He was sold on basically a promise by the founder. Founders are usually, they see the world slightly differently.
Well, yeah, they had to be optimists, right?
So I can say that because I've been one. And the big red flag, I'm surprised that he took the job, was the CEO, chief operating officer, not showing up every time he came. Is a massive red flag for me. Because as if you're a CEO, the first thing you want to do is you need to meet your potential, your future team, which he did not do. He didn't meet all the stakeholders. So he's inheriting a team where you have the CFO who knows is going to lead. You have a chief operating officer who he's never met. So he's in a tough spot because he's been in a rough and hard place. His team is not with him. Part of his, he has not done a great job securing the board on his side. I would spend some time one-on-one with each of the board members to try to win them over before getting into the board meeting. It does not look like that has happened. So in some ways, a lot of the rookie mistakes of CEOs, I'm just surprised that he's done that, especially with his background.
One of the questions that some CEOs ask when they're in front of the board in the hiring process is, are any sacred cows here? Right? And if this guy wasn't a sacred cow, would you let it bother you? It's not ideal. I mean, he's certainly been, I think he was nice by letting you know where he stood.
You're
right?
Talking about the chief operating officer?
Right. What your comment?
It's actually no unusual for a CEO to step into a position where he knows he's been interviewed by the board, but he hasn't met all of the director boards. That's pretty common.
He has not met?
Although it's not uncommon.
Okay. And what does a CEO in a turnaround bring in with him? He brings in an HR, chief HR person, and a CFO. Those two are what takes to get control of the company.
Yep.
In my view.
Yeah.
Okay, any other questions on this? Okay, so Larry comes in and he taps you on the shoulder and says, I've got an opening on this board. So the question on the table is, one, are you interested? I'm going to say most of you are leaning forward to it. But do you? How would you justify your skill set on this board?
That assumes we're interested in the board?
Yeah. Well, you know more now than you would. All right. So go ahead. Go ahead, Paul.
I would say the first thing you have to have a skill set is to be prepared and fully that you're going to break some china. Right in the boardroom, you have to do it pretty fast. Whether that's a skill or an aptitude or what, I don't know, but I think that's what I mean, because
so
it's like a set of dominoes here that are related to the first tranche of the loan, and now that might trigger a second one because they don't really have that much cash. And then they come into default. So there's going to be a lot of bad stuff happening pretty fast based on the operating track record.
So the new person has to have a strong back and is anticipating a certain amount of animosity or breaking china on the board, is what you're saying.
Can I get a clarification, please? How much do these potential board members know at this point?
In the scenario of somebody hiring?
You're asking the question to the room, which says,
the potential board member doesn't know. You know more than he does. Okay. So then,
the potential board member does not know this whole situation.
Correct.
So then the first thing the potential board member has to do is find this out, because the just looking at the surface and looking at the turmoil going on, you would say that it's not a turnaround, it's a resurrection for the company. And that that you're going to have to devote huge amounts of time as a board member to pulling it all together. But anyone who looks even at the surface of this and doesn't dig deeper has no right being a board member, to be perfectly truthful, because you're putting your own reputation at risk.
And so the rest of the board is mostly people there who are watching the money. They're all investors, doctors, people without a lot of background and not able to bring a lot to the party, which is probably how the company got into the shape it's in now with nobody raising alarms.
Probably believed in the dream.
Yeah.
So
I think that's right. This board needs to be replaced. That's not just, I think, that's how they got into this. John's right.
Okay.
I think it's unclear how much information we get ahead of time. I mean, I don't have a long track record on boards, but I do serve on a few boards, and it's amazing how much you thought you knew, and then either something was there or something quickly develops that's fairly serious, right? So, and nobody, especially if they feel that you come to the board with a particular set of skills that they want, I'm not certain that they're going to be as especially this team that we see, this board that's in place, that they would be as forthcoming and transparent.
But wouldn't you be able to see everything on the balance sheet? All you have to do is look at the balance sheet and ask questions or whatever. And you look at any kind of pending complaints, and if there's complaints with the Public Utility Commission, that's all public
record. In terms of what's public record, but I was reacting to the fact that we know more than an incoming board member, so I'm thinking they're in the dark and don't have access to this information.
So just to follow up on the lane, I mean, there are some basic things that you would know. A lot of things you would know, I agree with you completely. But the things you would know the financial condition. You would have looked at the cash flows, and the red flags would be waving at you to raise questions, right? You would know that somebody's trying to change the board, which is usually a red flag waving because the question is why. You know there's a founder still on the board, and how does that interplay? So there's like a whole series of questions to follow up on Elaine's and yours, that there's enough red flags flying that you would at least get into the conversation. They may not tell you the truth, but you'd be asking the questions, right?
Well, that's where the why, to your point, the why is important, right?
Yeah.
And not getting the answer to that may not give you enough.
Yeah, or it may tell you a lot.
Or it may tell you a lot.
Right. Yeah. They
right.
tell you you don't want to
right.
move forward.
Run.
So, let's say, go ahead.
Just, I thought your question was, Larry came to me and asked me to consider being on the board.
Correct.
And if I consider being on the board, my self-interest are interesting, but being a board member means that I'm supporting the CEO and their endeavors. And the way the business model reads to me is that it is a sector of industry that has a tailwind, so you have many startups that come into it, few are successful because they can't operate to a profit. My experience would help that people take their business development plan, which looks like it's in front of the operations, and secure the operations so that you get more utility and more yield out of it. Now, if I'm interested in that, it's dialogue and discussion I've had with the CEO to say, yes, it's a self-interesting thing, but I also believe the board position is to support the CEO, not blindly, but this new person coming in needs help. So the COO is a disaster, doesn't want to be there, so needs some operational help, and that's how I would think about the job or think about the opportunity, is can I really help them materially and not just be on a board for the sake of being on a board.
Interesting that the COO was part of a three-person team that drafted some stupid letter that is misleading at the least.
Well,
and wants the new CEO to just sign it and let's just get on with it, and you have to wonder.
Yeah.
There's a lot of red flags around
sure.
here for me.
What was your comment?
I think that's where the board, especially with the new CEO, I agree with you. In order to really insert yourself in, you need a good HR person to help you with all the change management that occurs. You need a finance person so you have clarity of the information. But you need a really strong operations person, and anything that's going to yield, make sure you're getting some return on the labor. And I suspect by looking at the numbers that they have strong business development because the industry has more demand, and so that's why at least startups are into it, but now you really have to figure out how to make money and extract value out of the model. So
to your point about, and yours, Larry, about the three people, there's actually from the same company. The founder was happy that he could get two engineers, two accountants, HR director from the same company. So that gave you a little different feel, for what the culture was, right? And the person with the 89% abandonment rate was the COO, direct responsibility for it, right? So your point about maybe there's some other scenarios in the back, it's one way to take care of the new CEO is if he stubs his toe by signing that letter. But we'll get to that in a minute.
By not signing the letter, a whole set of things are going to happen. I love the way it ends. It's now 9:00. The board meeting is 9:30.
But if you sign that letter,
that'll light the fuse.
Things are going to happen anyway.
I would say this half an hour doesn't leave enough time to read Elaine's book.
No, she's going to add a new chapter. Going to add a new chapter.
But you know, on a more serious note, you know, I sort of like look at this and, you know, is there sort of like, you know, scenario there at all that in the medium to long term this thing can make any money?
So let me back up and give you a little view where this is. Remember that the telecom industry was deregulated.
Yes.
All right. And so this is years before. That happened years before. But in the end, New England Bell was after the same little old lady on the corner of Main Street and Vine. All right. So was AT&T because she was their customer. And so was Comcast Cable. So they all ended up going after the same customer, and to compete, they had from their position, telco or cable, whatever, give bundled services, mm-hmm. All right? And so then the latest technology was fiber, and that attracted all the outside money and the new organizations like this guy's. So I think the founder was on the leading edge, since it was a four-year-old company, of some of this change. But it was a real estate play. Location, 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 because the city council will only approve one new cable company. So if you got LA, parts of LA, one person couldn't have gotten it all, but if you got parts of a big city like that, Boston, New York, you were sitting in a pretty good position. And this guy's strategy was to go where they weren't going and go after secondary, tertiary markets, partner with people who could provide him capital, because people and talent were, capital and talent were scarce in those days. And so that was some of what was going on here. All right?
Was he forecasting that he would be sort of like profitable and sort of like the pricing and, you know, in the face of those three gorillas that, you know, that they're playing in big market?
Was he forecasting that?
Yeah. What was he forecasting?
I don't know, and I don't know that he knows. I mean, he had forecasts. Remember, he had a CFO who the board felt wasn't up to the task, all right? So asking for some of these documents, you could probably get some, but you might have to wait because they were coming off spreadsheets in those days, et cetera, all right? But so that's to give you a little bit more background of where we were planned. So what about the CFO? What's best practices, or what would you do? If you were a CEO, would you leave that CFO in place? Okay, so you're going, who's the funds guy? You're going to go down to New York, you're going to go in, you're going to talk about how you've got a complete management team, and this guy's with you. So you're going to take him out, got nobody to generate the support work, because all he had was from this other company was accounting clerks, all right? So there was no depth in that organization and finance. I know the desire is not to have him there, but was it the wise thing? Would it be wise to pluck him out immediately?
But wasn't it part of the CEO's precondition that the CFO would be removed?
Correct.
So he's between a rock and a hard place because the CFO is leaving.
Who's in between a rock and a hard place?
The CEO.
Right.
Unless you work a deal where the CFO tells you where everything is buried in order for him to get his severance.
As I understand, the CFO is a very nice guy and was willing to work and not be destructive. So you had somebody to at least run the numbers, but as I understand it, before ever presentation in front of a private equity firm, they had gotten word that this guy wasn't going to be staying. And it's been my understanding that was great news for them because they could put their own guy in there, which they want to do anyway, put their own CFO that they felt comfortable with. Do you?
You're going to misrepresent documents that you're providing to the bank in order to do a drawdown?
Oh, you're back to the, we're now moving into the, that.
You're talking about keeping the CFO on board, and you've got a CFO who is perpetuating essentially fraud, or signing on to it at the very least.
Not just with the bank, but to the CEO as well.
Yes.
Hiding it from that.
Yes.
But one is lying.
What?
Is it
one is just lying to the CEO or keeping the CEO in the dark, and the other one could be the legal consequences.
Black and white.
Well, let's get into that since Ellen's taking us there.
Sorry.
And by the way, I want to thank Ellen and Larry, or excuse me, Mike, for screening this and providing me some input. All right?
I'm trying to be quiet.
Yeah, I know.
Difficult.
All right. So now we're at the part of the case with everybody that came for a CEO versus CFO, right? What sub you're the CEO. Where which way would you go on this? What's your thoughts?
So what I would do is you have to calm the ship first, right? In the sense that the CFO knows he's on his way out. The CEO is not interested. One of the board members is also supporting this unethical pathway. So step one is somebody has to put the foot on the brake. Otherwise, this is going to result in lots of bad things. So I'm going to put the foot on the brake if I was the CEO. And quickly call my other friends and bring that, do a wholesale change on the executive team. Get my own CFO, get my own chief operating officer, and try to see what expense I can cut so I can live, I can extend my life a little bit while I tighten some parts of the ship so that I can move towards better.
Okay, so could I focus this back to this is Thursday afternoon now,
yep.
And we have to make a decision by 9:30.
Yep.
So in that environment, what are somebody's thoughts?
I have a thought that I didn't mention earlier.
Okay.
The key thing here is the founder and chairman is still on the board. He knows all of the history. He's still there. So why wouldn't he get on the call and take responsibility because the CEO's been on the job for 10 days? It's his problem. He built it. He should be the guy stepping up and standing up and saying, I know
he won't.
But it would be the right thing to do. I'm not saying he would have.
I've seen this movie.
He should own it. And the CEO might just want to just leave and say the hell with you for lying to me. Good luck to you. I don't want to fix this mess.
Okay.
Hasn't happened yet.
Well, that could be what he says on the call.
Who said they were a problem solver? Were you the one that said you were a problem solver?
Yeah. To the board.
I think all people in this scenario would be problem solvers. All right, so who has a different thought than Mike's?
You've
got to
get support from above before you can fix what's below.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
You got to get support from above before you can fix the mechanics of what you got going on below. And to Ellen's point, if you know sufficient information, if you're signing, you have to be sufficiently comfortable that what you're doing when you're signing is not illegal and won't break covenant straight away. If you have sufficient information that you will break covenant straight away, the banks chase you a lot quicker than equity partners, and they can be coming in with criminal lawyers real quick. So you've got a personal problem, which is a criminal one, not an operational one. So if you don't feel you've got the board behind you, you've got to call them out. It's high noon at this board meeting. You've got to give them the information and say we're not sufficiently comfortable with the financials that we know we won't break a covenant instantly exit, so we can't go forward here. And just put it on the line. If you get pushed back to the board, you've got a decision whether you resign straight away, look, that's it, so you take yourself out, you whistleblower, or they change their mind in front of you, and then you can determine what you're going for.
So since he's been there 10 days, this would be his first time in front of or on the phone in a formal board call. Do you think he felt he had, where would his confidence be?
His confidence would be pretty low, so he's either got two choices. Either very quickly, ahead of time, he can talk to the chairman. He's got enough time to talk to the chairman and no one else. If the chairman is behind him, then he's okay. If the chairman is not, he's got a bigger problem. He's probably got his own personal bank account. He's got to really push it back to the board and make it their decision. And if they try to force it on him and try to encourage him to commit to criminal act, he knows where he stands. He's just going to step out.
Okay.
Should he also call an attorney? Very, very quickly. To have the board member financial advisor say this is not a problem is really scary. Yeah. And I think the CEO, before doing anything else in the 10 minutes that he has between 9 and 9:30, needs to call an attorney very quickly, have the attorney evaluate the plan and say where he stands in terms of liability.
Okay, what else?
Probably the way to think about it is that I have been there for 10 days and I'm getting out very soon.
That's what's being recommended at that end of the table.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if you can cut your losses to 10 days, it's not too bad.
Who brought the CEO in?
The board.
How did the board found him?
The board found him, well, it was a search firm. The board found him and the lady in charge of the financial advisor was the head of the search committee.
Yeah. Too, for the record, we did not do the search.
Boy, that was quick.
Are you going to do the search for the new board?
I don't think they can pay us.
Either the CEO is here.
How did the board not know they have 2 months of cash left?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Like when this guy was hired, no one told him that there were 2 months?
They may not have known.
They probably didn't.
They may not have known. They probably didn't know.
The operations was several states away, and so I don't think the board knew.
But, how can you sign up to be the CEO if you don't?
Yeah, I mean, as the new CEO, to say, look, here's the reality, right? We've got a month left of cash. I've got my inherited team that's telling me, if I don't sign this thing, we're probably going to run out. But I don't feel good about that because it's, it may be legal, but either way, it's not legal. And it's certainly immoral, either way, right? It's unethical. And to put it, as you said, back to the board to say, let's just lay it all out on the table.
So Sean, they had the cash. They have $24 million. They signed the debt instrument before. They just couldn't, when they went to draw it down, that's when the lying started and the fraud started. So they have the $24 million. They just were supposed to meet certain terms and conditions.
But they didn't. But
correct.
Yeah. So they don't have.
No, but during the hiring process for the CEO, he could have been comforted with the fact that they had plenty of cash at that time. Now, if you talk to Ellen, she says her hair is on fire if you're down to months cash and can't get to it, right?
But it was contingent. I mean, it's subject to covenants. I mean, you cannot draw if you
know. I could imagine a story when a CEO's getting hired and the chairman of the board founder saying, oh, well, we just signed this deal for $24 million, and all you have to do is, we'll just draw it down as we need it. So you can imagine how somebody coming in would be comforted by that situation.
Sure.
But this is a black and ethical situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Craig, we have 10 minutes.
Okay.
Well, we have 10 minutes, but he only has a half an hour before he has to. And the problem that I'm having is, what's he jumping on an airplane for? He's got a meeting coming up, at noontime. He needs to, he can't jump on an airplane right now.
I have to create a certain sense of urgency.
No,
He did jump on the airplane, I think.
He did. And called his lawyer, right?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, but simply to announce a telephone board meeting, not to say
right.
WTF.
Yeah.
What does that stand for?
Why the face?
What's the facts?
All right. What about conflicts of interest? Who doesn't have a conflict of interest on this board? Nobody's got a conflict of interest?
No, everybody.
What
does.
About the retired?
Oh, okay.
Regional Bell. He might not have.
There's
a conflict.
Doctor.
The retired exec from the Bell.
The doctors.
Company.
But they're investors, right? Yeah, they're investors.
The retired, Belleg is, it looks like the only one, right?
Does the CEO, because of his tranche issue with third of the stock, does he have a conflict of interest? So he would be incented to make sure things kept going forward. Okay.
That's not the conflict, that's the incentive.
It's his incentive to go forward, but if he made the wrong decision, if he made the right decision for the organization, yeah.
Now, is it appropriate for him to sit down with the syndicators and have a telephone call with them and say, listen, I've got to buy some time? I'm new here, I'm going to buy some time. You know, you don't sign the letter. You can't sign the letter.
Right.
But you've got to sit down and say, listen, you got
to
be honest with
them. I think he has to talk to the board first.
Right.
I would say that becomes part of the agenda of the board call.
Okay, now I think you've been giving me this, but a position to where we had one against the other, but I was looking for alternatives also. Was there another way to do this in a short period of time? You're the new CEO, maybe you can help us out here. We all feel involved in your search because it was mentioned in here. That's why I'm joking with you.
Okay. I if you're asking me the question, I think that time is not his friend. However, he does need to see where the board is. And I think the pitch that I would make is, here's where we're at. We need to go outside and we need to declare where we're at and say, I need more time to assess this and just buy some time.
Yeah.
The issue that I still keep going back to is, and I think you brought this up, is maybe the outcome was wonderful here. I don't know how they monetize their operations enough to get, you know, to live. But that's a tactical conversation. But strategically, I would say, if the board's on, if the board agrees and the chairman agrees, I think you have to go outside and you have to say, hey, I need some time here. I'm just new to it. I'm not comfortable signing this document until I see, and then run scenarios to figure out if, how can you make it work? You know, how can you model the numbers such that it works and it's not deceptive? And I think that's the answer. You have to solve, the issue to solve is not just access to capital. The issue to solve is, why are you out of the covenants? And then how do you get into covenants? So you got to really focus your organization around. That's what I would do, is focus your organization while I'm doing this is, here's the problem we present. We're upside down. Here's the plug. You figure the plug out. Why go talk to the board? And that's what I would do.
He's got a fix. Knowing this is out in the public domain with the Public Utility Commission and they're leaning over to certainly electric gas utility partners. They're all aware of these problems.
Yeah.
And if you're looking at this other drawdown where they want to bring in more money to extend it to 22 more cities, if you extend this nonsense, that you won't even get to 22 cities, because the one you just put in has fallen over. So he's got to fix that first, get his company running sound before he can then go forward, and he knows that, they all know that. And so, to his point, he's got to fix this and buy more time. And the best way to do it is to be honest.
The first step to fix is you say, you tell the financial company, I think we're in violation of covenant, and we know you're transferring the debt, and we just need a timeout.
That's it.
Yeah,
that's got to be the first.
The interesting conversation here is, in a dark moment, you say, "Everybody knew this. No one told me.
Mm-hmm.
Why?"
Yeah.
So the question is, why am I really here?
Yeah.
And then, as the CEO, you ask me a question. So if I was brought under those pretenses, I'd be sitting there going, "What the hell's really happening here?"
Well, there is a thought on that. When you read the beginning of the case, you look at this man's reputation and what he's done prior.
His resume is not big enough.
Pardon me?
It's not big enough.
No, here's the thing. He has his credentials and his reputation going into this. Right? He does,
but his resume is not big enough for the job.
Well, let me hear you out. So he's got this reputation. We all know he can't afford to have his reputation tarnished.
Agreed.
But there could have been some thought into this with his credentials that maybe they'll believe him.
Right.
But he's smart.
Well,
maybe they'll believe who?
Because he's clean.
I would say I agree. His credibility is there, but unless I misread this, his resume is not big enough for the job. So that's just my read.
What does that mean?
He can't fix it.
And again, a short amount of information, but it appears as though I agree with you that he was hired for his reputation and his credibility. But I'm not sure he had the working experience, and I'm not sure he had all the credentials of saying, I have all the success to say I can fix this. So it was really about access to capital and his credibility. So I, that's just conjecture, but if I'm him, that's what I'm sitting there thinking about. Why the hell am I even sitting here anymore? Why was
Craig,
I brought in?
That's a good question, because... Tell us what happened?
Because, you know, I think you are dealing with the
can
organizational
you turn off the
culture that is not particularly conducive to a certain thing.